Hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. It's fun seeing everybody log in the chat and tell us where you're from. I'm so glad to welcome you here. My name is Grace Pouch. If we haven't met yet, I'm happy to meet you. I'm Renovare's content manager. I help create our print resources and our newsletter and our podcasts. And I'm so glad to have you all joining us for this webinar, which we are calling Next Gen Spiritual Formation: How Can Young People Have a Flourishing Life with God? So let's meet our panelists. I want to introduce you to our friends, Michael Ware and Chinny McDonald. So honored to have them with us. So Chinny and Michael, y'all can come on. Hi. Chinny McDonald, wave, Chinny. We're so glad to have you
Hi.
with us. Chinny is a writer, broadcaster, and author. She is the director of Theos, which is a religion and society think tank in the UK. She was previously the head of public engagement at Christian Aid. She is the author of God Is Not a White Man and Other Revelations and Unmaking Mary, Shattering the Myth of Perfect Motherhood. Chinny contributes to TV and radio programs, such as regularly presenting the BBC's Thought for the Day. She is on the advisory board for Cambridge University Library and is a canon theologian at Chester Cathedral. On top of all that, Chinny is also a mum. Did I? I'm trying to get the British.
A mom,
Yeah.
yeah.
A mum. And tell us how old your kids are, Chinny.
My boys are 7 and 3, so they're all relatively young.
Awesome. So great. I first heard Chinny speak about next generation topics on her documentary podcast, which is called Motherhood Versus the Machine. It's so good. She has a lot of wisdom to bring to this conversation. So I'm really glad that you're able to join us, Chinny, from London. And thank you for being here.
Thanks
Great
for
to have
having
you.
me.
And I'm also so pleased to welcome back to our show, our friend Michael Ware, who's been with us before. I'm sure you are all familiar. Michael is the founder, president, and CEO of the Center for Christianity and Public Life, CCPL, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit institution based in the nation's capital with a really cool mission. This is so important right now, a mission to contend for the credibility of Christian resources in public life for the public good. CCPL actually has a summit coming up. So, Michael, really thankful that you took the time to be with us. We're going to share a link to that summit in the chat, along with CCPL has graciously offered a 20% discount off of tickets for that with the code Renovare. So, we'll put all of that into the chat in a minute. For well over a decade, Michael has served as a trusted resource and advisor for a range of civic leaders on matters of faith and public life, including as a White House and presidential campaign staffer. He's the author of The Spirit of Our Politics, Spiritual Formation, and the Renovation of Public Life. And Michael is also a dad. Tell us about your kids, Michael.
Sure. Very close. Same basic age range. I have two girls, Saoirse and Ilaria, and they're 6 and 4 years old. Yeah.
Amazing. That's so great. Well, we're coming to you where all three of us hopefully will share with you out of our personal experience and also kind of the things that we're seeing through our work and our engagement in public life and ministry. And we know that all of you are bringing with you wisdom, questions, hopes, concerns. We just really value the hundreds of questions that came in. And I want you all to know that I read every single one, and I did not stick them into an algorithm to summarize or anything like that. I just really wanted to read each one so that I could listen to you and listen to the Holy Spirit. And I was just very moved by the depth of concern and care that your questions reflected. So thank you all for sharing your heart with us. And I want to take a moment of silence, actually, as we begin. to honor all of those questions, the ones that were sent in and also the unspoken ones that I know each one of you is carrying. You're all here for a reason. And so as we get quiet just now, I'd like to invite everybody who's here to hold the names and faces and the hopes and concerns that are on your mind before God. So let's take a moment of silent prayer. Oh Lord, you are the God who sees. You are the shepherd who guides. You anoint us and fill up our cup with joy, with love, and with compassion. Give us your heart for the young people around us, and give us courage, Lord, to face this hour and these challenges. Help us to know that we are not alone and you are with us. Amen. So I think that a great place for us to start today would be with some kind of clarifying questions. I loved a question that Kelsey sent in. When you say next generation, are we talking kids, youth, adults? What are we talking about here? Michael, do you want to, I know you have at the summit coming up, you guys are going to have a whole kind of section on next generation. How are you defining that? And what would you say to that question?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It really does depend on the context, right? So for the session at our summit, we're talking about Gen Z. So
okay.
A little bit older than your youngest, Grace, younger than me. but there are other contexts where you know, we want to talk about millennials and even a bit younger. I do think I sort of came to this conversation thinking really of sort of like 30 and under, and so a lot of my comments and thoughts sort of relate to sort of kids, young adults, and then you know, folks who are maybe like in the young professionals kind of category. Yeah,
very helpful, thank you. Chinny, would you add anything to that?
No, apart from that, there are very specific examples. You know, people for Gen Z, it's people born between this year and that year, and then there's Gen Alpha, who I think are our kids who are a bit younger. So for me, when we're talking about the next generation, it's almost the next generation to hold power in institutions or in professions. So they are kind of coming of age, they're kind of in their 20s, maybe late teens, so maybe 18 to 30s is what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
And the thing is, as I get older, I start to realize that there is a gap between me and those people, which is strange. So I am a geriatric millennial. I'm one of the elder millennials, but we're talking about the kind of the people who grew up as digital who are digital natives, really. I think we're talking about those people.
Yes, very helpful. Yeah, it was interesting because even picking out a name for this webinar, I was kind of curious. We left it broad on purpose. Next generation, we did not define that. Just kind of curious how our listeners and would hear that. And it was really interesting because the questions that came in ranged from like 3-year-olds to late 20s, you know. So we're going to do our best today to cover a broad range. And we're also going to look at some specifics, but I just wanted everybody to know where it's obviously a huge topic and a really broad range, what we mean by next generation. So we'll do our best, but we're Renovare is hoping to circle back to this topic. This isn't going to be our only time we talk about next generation. So Well, this is our jumping off point, and we're happy to do that today. I thought this was a great question. John asks, I am a baby boomer. I recently heard a speaker on Gen Z state that the shift in the world from his generation to Gen Z is as monumental as the Industrial Revolution. And he just asked, what is this monumental shift? Is it just technology, or is there more to it? So I think that's a great question for us of probably a lot of people are kind of wondering, how different is it really? And what is the shift, and what makes these generations we're talking about, kind of 30 and under, what makes life so different for them? Chinny, what would you say to that?
Yeah, so each generation has their things, the things that they face. The post Second World War generation were having to deal with the kind of rebuilding of their nations, a kind of hopeful future, having to rebuild themselves kind of economically, as well as I think we start to see institutions formed globally, nationally, and there's this kind of rebuilding. I think that for this next generation, I think technology is a huge thing that we cannot underestimate. But if you take technology out of it, I would say that this generation, when I think about people younger than me, they are living in a completely different world to the world that I grew up in. And if I think about it purely in terms of a sense of hope, I feel like I grew up in a world where it was all about progress, that the only way was up. The world, we were going to change the world, we were going to be history makers. And I notice in the younger generations an anxiety, a lack of trust in the things in things that are institutions being solid and therefore around forever, a questioning of the authorities and leadership in a way that has consequences for how they live their lives. So I think the main difference is a lack of solid foundations, truth, knowledge, all of these things. A lot of things are relative, and there's a lot of instability and therefore a lack of hope.
That's so good. Yeah, I M Michael, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I'd add two words or ideas. The first would be agency, and really a feeling of a lack thereof, which is particularly harmful for young people. And this idea that so much of life is happening to them. Particularly when it comes to technology. So we know that, for instance, they want to turn off their phones. They'd love to spend less time on social media. They feel in some ways powerless to do so. They feel like the structures of life have them doing what they do not want to do. The Apostle Paul comes to mind and his words in Romans. The other word is contested, which is I think that young people, the next generation, they don't lack for moral assertion. It's a different kind of relativism than I think we were talking about in the 90s, which is sort of anything goes. Actually, I think the next generation has a very has a an urge towards notions of justice. What they lack is kind of a any trust that their moral assertions can have a grounding in any kind of authority or reality. And so that's the word anxiety, which has already been said, I think is a really, and that's a big source of it, this sort of feeling like there's a need to perform, there's a need to assert, but not a firm foundation on which to stand, in part because they have access to more information than any set of human beings in the history of humanity, and everything, and that leads to, I think, a sense of fragility.
I think if I could just add as well, I think one of the things that I notice about I think the baby boomer generation compared to Gen Z is that there were paths laid out, straightforward paths for boomers and older, and maybe to some
Yes.
extent my generation, which were maybe if you were middle class, you went to school, then you went to college, then you got a job, then you got married, then you had kids. And all of those things, speaking from a British context, are no longer a given. There, you cannot necessarily afford to either get married or buy a house. So people are delaying extended adolescence, basically, where they are not able to move forward and have that sense of agency for themselves, like move out of their parents' homes because they have to stay because they don't have enough money to be able to buy a house. All of the things that I think that we took for granted, or older generations have taken for granted, as the things that every human being needs, shelter, love, relationships are no longer straightforward, and that therefore provides even more anxiety, I think, for them.
That's great. Thank you. I think that all of that is super helpful, and I think a lot of those things are going to come up again in some other questions. So we'll move on, but you'll hear more of that as we go. I want to jump into actually kind of a tough one here, because when if we talk about how things are shifting, one of the biggest shifts, pretty much across the board, everybody can agree this is groundbreaking, unprecedented, is artificial intelligence. And this question comes in from Brandon Rickabaugh, who's a friend and should probably be in this conversation with us. But great question from Brandon. He says there's a serious surge in the use of AI companion. This would be like chat features, spiritual formation bots, even like chat tools that are supposed to engage around spiritual issues. And he says many mental health experts and Christian organizations are actually supporting their use. Others are very concerned. So he says, do you see this as a significant issue? What are the pros and cons of AI bots for young people's spiritual formation? So that is we're getting into territory where, people my age and up never, this was not a part of our growing up at all. So how do you see this affecting young people? Either one of you jump in.
Yeah, maybe a few thoughts. First, to just arc back to the last question. So Pope Leo, at the beginning of his papacy, directly related his papacy to that of the most previous Pope Leo, who wrote an encyclical, Rerum Novarum, regarding the Industrial Revolution. And Pope Leo is sort of, I think, suggested he views the new wave of technology, particularly AI, and artificial general intelligence, which is a particular as a sort of new industrial revolution that could be as or even more transformative than the Industrial Revolution. And so I do think this is a significant moment. I think it's going to be a defining issue and set of issues. I think this is very significant for spiritual formation. I'd raise a couple salient points, and so interested what Chinny's gonna have to offer. First, I think there is a kind of pseudo authority that comes with these LLMs, with these large language models, that can direct and offer a kind of a cutoff of the actual pursuit of knowledge. That is going to be a profound challenge. And so this idea, for instance, that you can, kind of dump the sermons of your favorite pastor into a chat bot, and that sort of you'll be able to interact on the questions of your life and the questions of the day, and you'll be sort of directed. That's a the technology there is only going to get more and more sophisticated, and part of what that will do, I fear, is sort of cut off so much of the person from the actual act of becoming. And so that's a significant that this sort of pseudo authority, the presentation of authority that some of these LLMs offer. I think also, and this is a more banal point, or at least it's become banal as we've there's a sort of sycophancy in some of these models, and a deference to and a reaffirmation of what one wants to hear, as opposed to any kind of obviously genuine exchange, not to mention genuine relationship or community, or the iron sharpening iron. This is a false relationship, a false exchange, and what that can do to undermine a sense of authentic formation and relationship building is something we're going to have to contend with. I'll say this won't just be a problem for young people. This is going to be an issue for all of us, not just as it comes to when we think we're doing formation, but maybe even most importantly, in our exchange with these bots, when formation isn't on our minds, but we are nevertheless are being formed by our interactions with this technology.
Yes. It's kind of a bedrock spiritual formation principle is that what we're doing off the spot is training us for
Exactly
our
right.
how we act on the spot. So yeah, I can't wait to hear what you have to say too, Chinny.
Oh gosh, this is the big question of this is the big question of our age. And the thing that I was going to also say was the sycophancy for me is a big problem. And that's not just for young people, but for myself as well, if I'm kind of interacting with ChatGPT. And I think when it comes to spiritual formation, what we therefore risk losing is the tension, the molding, the shaping, the dealing with things that are uncomfortable, and that help us become more like Jesus. However, I don't think that it is all bad. I think that there are certain pros. I also think that every generation of young people, again, has their things. As technologies advance, there are different things that we deal with. So I was trying to think of what would be my equivalent to this when I was a teenager, and I had I think it was a youth Bible, where in the front it had these sections on grief, this on rejection, this on success. So I'd be like, well, I'm feeling successful today, so I'm going to go to the front of my Bible. I'm going to skip to the bit in the Bible that it talks about success, whatever. Because young people, for young people in particular, and maybe to some extent for all of us, they are themselves growing up. They are learning about themselves. They are going through some things. And for everyone, we often think, what does the Christian faith, what does Jesus have to say about the thing that I am going through now? So that was the case when I was young. Then, as I grew older, I was able to read the Bible on my phone, right? So I therefore could again read a bit of the Bible, not think about it in a context of a long journey over hundreds of years, shaped by different people. And there's a tendency with that technology to make the Bible. Again, a bite-sized thing that I can get out of my phone and I can go to whatever I need to be dealing with. The thing about AI is it starts with us. It always starts with us. So whatever is the question that we are asking, whatever is the thing that we are going through, whatever it is the knowledge that we're trying to seek, it comes from us, inputted it into a machine, and then it replies with probably what we hoped they'd say. I don't know. So that for me is the big problem. It also is by its nature disembodied. So it is not the same as a mentor or a spiritual director or even people in your church community who can talk with you together about the Bible, about discipleship, about Jesus. It's a kind of one-on-one interaction. However, the positives I think for some young people will be that that affords them a freedom that they wouldn't feel within a church setting. They might be able to ask it the things that they wouldn't want to ask someone in real life. And maybe they are exploring before ever setting foot in a church building what the Christian faith has to say to them. So these are the kind of challenges I think for us.
Thank you both. This is I feel like this could be its own webinar, which would be really fun to do. I really liked, I think one of you, maybe both of you said used the word authentic, and I think that's I think young people are really hungry for authenticity, and so the very existence of something that's called artificial and it functions by simulation and it a lot of the interfaces kind of simulate another, like you said, Jenny, like a disembodied, being, kind of a simulation. I wonder if that's one of the ways that the church can kind of stand out in the coming years by being a place where things are really authentic, like a little island of authenticity, and a place where wisdom is embodied and, those kinds of things. So maybe that'll come up again as we go on too, but thank you for those good thoughts. I'm trying to think where to go next. Okay, this is an interesting one. Leslie asks, how can we help young people see how important a Christian worldview is? And she says, are there resources that you can, use to help others identify what their worldview is? I wanted to dive into this one. At Renovar, we usually use a slightly different wording, but we're talking about the same kind of stuff. We talk a lot about what somebody's picture of God is, what their picture of themselves and the world, their picture of the gospel. But it's that same kind of idea. Like, what is how you view things, how you view, especially God, impacts everything. It's the most important, it's going to change everything. So, with young people, I think I'm going to riff on Leslie's question and ask you, Michael, I'll start with you. How do those kinds of pictures or those views take shape in a young person's mind? Where are they? What's forming that?
So it's interesting. The previous conversation had me thinking about Dallas Willard's definition of knowledge as the ability to represent something as it is by an appropriate basis of thought and experience, which just like sidebar really puts into question, it prompts an interesting discussion about whether artificial intelligence can be said to represent knowledge if it's absent experience, by definition. And that leads me to answer this question, which is experience is just so vital. And I think one of the things, part of what worldview has come to mean in some circles is a set of propositions that we're able to repeat. But as you said, Grace, it's that at the very least, does what we're, I think what we're trying to get at here, far short. We're actually talking about the sort of with God life. We want our young people, we want all of us to be able to encounter and move through life in a way in which there is not a break from the life we're living with God and what we see and experience and think at the grocery store or at our jobs or as we're parenting our kids. And for young people, it's important to, I think, for them to experience people who actually live that way and for people in their life to narrate that experience. Not in a way that's overly instructional or performative, but I think for them to have access to an experience with people who are genuinely living out the question of the with God life is absolutely, absolutely vital. I think the other thing I'd say is we need to be very careful about taking, I think, sort of easy ways out of difficult conversations. And one of the ways that we do that is, especially with young people, and especially, with our children and with our families, is sort of asserting worldview precepts, not as knowledge, but as tradition. Or as sort of this is the way our family runs, or this is just what we believe. We really want to, and believe me, I understand. I have a 6-year-old who asks questions, particularly around bedtime. I've noticed that some of these questions come up when she's supposed to be sleeping. That is a really interesting thing. But there can be a real temptation, like, look. It's just what we believe, sweetheart. I really try to avoid that. We want our young people in particular to again feel like there's a foundation, there's a reality that we're contending with, not just a set of precepts that we nod our head to.
Yes. Chinny, feel free to add to that. And I'm going to ask you kind of like part two of the question. If it is so much experienced and through these relationships of like seeing people who have that life and being drawn to that, I feel like the question we got the most of are kind of questions that were phrased like, I'm a grandparent, or I'm a teacher, or I'm an uncle, or I'm, just a church friend. How do I like meet younger people and form these relationships where that kind of experience and modeling and mentoring can take place? So do you have anything to add to the kind of how did the images and worldviews take shape? Or would you like to just to carry it further, talk to us about where those relationships, how they can form?
Yeah, so I think one thing that is key and that we should all strive towards in our church communities is intergenerational church communities, diverse church communities. We talk a lot in my context about younger generations, missing generations from church, which might be changing now. But by targeting only younger people or being in churches that only have people in their 20s, what you miss there is a whole with God life. And I was listening to a podcast just last week called Sunday School for Misfits, and it was with a couple of it's run by Selena Stone, and there was something so beautiful in the conversation that she had with her guest, Jerrell Robbins Brown, which was that in a church that has got people who have faithfully showed up on a Sunday morning for 60 years, and they have given testimony of the way in which God has brought them through all of the challenges that life brings people, and yet they are still there. That is seeing what it means to be a Christian, what it means to live a whole life with God, no matter what the challenges are in the joys and the lows as well. I think when we're thinking, so when I heard Christian worldview, I that can go kind of two ways, can't it? Because there can be a concept of a Christian worldview which is political,
Right.
which would assume a certain politics. That is clearly not the case. There are Christians, as Michael has written lots about, there are Christians of all different varieties who believe different things. But there is also the Christian worldview, which is an alternative way of seeing the world, which is seeing the kingdom in action. And one of the things I love in the New Testament is where in the Gospels is where Jesus often says, "You have heard it said, but I say to you." So for young people today, I think a Christian worldview that is modeled in going to intergenerational churches, you have heard it said that generations don't mix. But I say to you, here's this kind of messy multi-generational church, or you have said heard it said that you need to self-optimize your life to become endlessly productive, whatever it is. But I say to you that God loves you as you are, that you are someone who is of value. If we can instill in our young people those alternative worldviews that we have told them stories about, but also they have seen it in their homes or they've seen it in their churches, that for me is what a Christian worldview is that will carry them through whatever it is that life throws at them.
So good. Yes. I love that. And I think that idea that their picture of God and all these things would be shaped by people who have authentically, it's making me think of 1 John 1, like the things that we've touched with our hands and seen with our eyes, and we've known this joy and we want to share it with you. It's such a wonderful testimony and bringing young people into direct contact with Jesus Christ. But it, like you said, Tani, it's going to be so countercultural, the view that Jesus influences us with, if we make him our primary influence, are going to be very counter to the world. That makes me think of a question, actually, very specific question about a 10-year-old child that I wanted to ask you guys. It's about kind of even in the younger, as we look at the young kids, your kids' ages, that they are already, if what we want to focus on as parents and teachers and friends of young people is to help them have a good life, the good life, the Jesus-centered life, that things are already going to become quite, they're going to be at odds with kind of the ways of the world. And Marion says, I had a recent discussion with my 10-year-old boy. He still wants to play pretend and imagine, but none of his peers are doing those kinds of things. They're into the screens and whatnot. She says, how can we encourage children in appropriate ways to flow against the grain of society and encourage them to hold tightly to their youthful qualities? Which I love that question. Chinny, what do you think about that?
I think a lot of that comes from safe, feeling safe at home. Feeling like the home is the place where you can be who you are. You don't have to follow what other people are doing, which instills a kind of confidence, I think, in young people when they're outside the home to be able to know that they can kind of not follow the crowd. But that I think at 10 years old, that's still possible. I don't know whether it's possible at 13, whether the pull becomes too much of kind of peer pressure to not do those things. But I think what we can do as parents is to encourage that within the home setting.
That's great. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And also, try to build plausibility structures in the life of your kids and the relationships that form around them that sort of make that more possible, more something that they can imagine. And so I know that there's been sort of the development of sort of pods
Yes.
of families that have just agreed, we're not gonna get cell phones for our kids until they hit a certain age, or we have similar kinds of commitments around screen time and that sort of thing. And so the environment of the home is obviously paramount to the extent that you could help arrange for and create a sense of community in that will be all the more helpful, I think. But of course, as we'll probably talk more about, it's not just young people that are feeling isolated and lonely under pressure from all of these different developments. And so it sometimes it can be easier said than done to build that kind of community, but it's something we should aim for and think about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think a few people from my pod are logged on today. So thank you to yeah, it really does help so much to have just some like-minded, even if you maybe don't agree or do everything exactly the same, to just have some people who have those core values in common and can say, this is a safe place to be different than what everybody's doing out there. Yeah, very helpful. One more question, then we're going to get into some of the questions that have been coming in live while we're talking. I love this question. This is from Alex in Great Britain. How do you engage and encourage deep spirituality in children beyond telling Bible stories, cutting and coloring shapes? I don't know why, but that made me laugh because I love cutting and coloring shapes. So Alex is not necessarily saying those are not good things to do, but I love this question. It's like, what else can you do to help your child, no matter what age they are, develop a capacity for deep spirituality? Michael, what would you say for that?
Time, like the time and spaciousness, and I think long car drives, long walks, responding to their curiosity with curiosity of your own. I think expressing desires and hopes for their lives, even if they don't seem to. I mean, I was just thinking, seeing the questions in the chat, reading the questions, gosh, what a gift it would be to young people to know that in the middle of a workday, there are hundreds and hundreds of adults who have taken time out because they love the next generation. They're asking questions about how they could love their grandchildren and their nieces and nephews and their kids. Like, that is just our young people don't hear that enough, and they don't see it exhibited enough sometimes. And so those would be some thoughts. I'll also say, and maybe this is a bit duplicative of an earlier comment, but just to be a bit more specific, my wife and I have just thought about having two young girls, even now, who are the people we're placing in their lives now, so that when they have God questions and life questions that maybe, for whatever reason, it feels it feels too complicated to ask mom or dad, that there are trusted adults that they've seen and that they've come to trust and respect over the course of their lives, that we, my wife and I, love and respect, that can be these sort of intermediaries and these sort of outside advisors and prayer partners for our girls. And we just think God's going to bless even that sort of intention now as our girls get older.
Yes. So good. Chinny, what about you? How What do you do to help encourage deep spirituality for your kids?
Honestly, it's a question that I am wrestling with because my children are, I think my oldest is now 7, and I'm starting to feel like, okay, like this is the time. I feel like it's really important not to force deep spirituality on young children because it's just not age appropriate. They're not going to understand in the same way. But we had a moment just before I started this call. I've got a framed "The Lord is My Shepherd" psalm on my desk, and my son, who we haven't yet done his spellings for this week, but he was reading through it. He was reading it aloud, and I was like, "Right, he knows the word righteousness. He can read that. Great." And he said, "What is that?" And I said, "Oh, it's like a prayer." And he said, "Well, it's not a prayer because this person's talking about God, not to God." And I was like, yeah,
Great
okay.
observation.
Yes. It's not actually technically a prayer, but a lot of Christians use it. But I'm starting to see that he is able to handle this kind of complexity in a way that he wasn't 2 years ago. And what is really important is also us modeling it and talking about it and not being self-conscious about it, knowing that a lot of his friends' parents just don't do this, don't go to church, don't pray, don't do any of this stuff. And they're only starting to notice that, once they go to school. So I think modeling it ourselves, but also bearing with them as they kind of grow older.
So good. Yeah, I'll jump in on this one too, since my kids are a little older. And this was, I loved this question. I was drawn to it because I just wrote a book about this, trying to answer this question. And the way I kind of approached it was to try to identify things that block deep spirituality, like what keeps kids shallow. And a lot of times it's really similar to the things that make us shallow. So if a lot of noise keeps you from being able to be a list, listen to the Lord, listen to others, then there are things we can do to shut the noise, to bring it down a notch. Or if really busy schedule, keeps you just kind of on the surface of life, never able to like connect really deeply, then slowing down the schedule is one way to encourage depth. So I think that th this is one of those areas where we talk a lot in spiritual formation about kind of like indirection. So these might be practices or things you can do that aren't on the nose. Like this isn't sitting down for a Bible study, but this is like, we're going to do a long project together that takes several days, and that's going to help build some endurance and some resilience, because these are things you're going to need. These are capacities that you have to have for a with God life, because discipleship is hard, is a long obedience, So just those kinds of things I think are very interesting to explore. And I love like thinking at the stages you're in with your kids of just like how it looked and felt so small at that time. Like, is this even going to make a difference? But it does. And so just encourage everybody, like these little things do, they do have a big impact in the long run. So, okay, we're going to take a couple of our live questions that have come in. I'm just going to pull those up. This is one that says, what can a grandparent do when their children have left the faith and they may not have a particularly, strong way to influence them? What might they do? That's a tough one. Either of y'all feel free to jump in.
So I think an important part of that, it's a question I've never ever thought about. So let me just see what I think. I think one thing that's really important is having the conversation with the parents to say, are you okay if I take your children to church, if I pray with them? And also recognizing that actually that stage in which their children have had children is a really formative time of potentially them potentially returning to the faith that they had in younger years. So if you can model within that space, grace, invite them along too, it's often in that moment that they might themselves, the parents might come back to the faith that they lost. But I think one thing that shouldn't happen is secretly, praying with their kids or secretly taking them to church. And I think it's about openness and conversation.
Very helpful. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, I think those are all really important points. I'm not sure I have anything to add, in part because it's a hard question to answer as at the level of the generic. You know, I think so much is contingent on what the experience of the family is growing up. I did see a comment just saying pray, and I think that's a really that's a really worthwhile thing to do. You know, I'd also say, and this is a more general comment, though it relates here, which is especially when we're talking about young children, I think we want to be careful about making our anxieties their anxieties, and creating an environment, particularly as it relates to their faith and to God, where there is a pressure to perform and sort of dissociate. And if, you know, if we're looking over their shoulders, they might get the idea that God is sort of leering over them as well. And so I just felt moved to say
Yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. Our receptivity of people, even when they're choosing not to be engaged with God, is in a way modeling God's love. Are we welcoming and kind? That's super helpful. Chinny, I'm gonna throw this one out to you. What do you think about the quiet revival, which is apparently something going on in the UK among Gen Z? Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, so this was actually done by the Bible Society, a piece of research done by the Bible Society, which is my kind of main employer. So I've been very involved with this project. But basically, the number of 18 to 24-year-olds in churches, particularly young men, has significantly increased between from 2018 to 2024. So in 2018, there were just 4% of 18 to 24-year-olds who were going to church, and now that is at 16%. So significant increase. And what that has shown, it's been really interesting being engaged with this, is because over the past, I'd say, 2 years, there has been much more kind of openness to religion in general, Christianity in particular, in our public conversations. Journalists, writers, historians coming to faith, talking about their kind of conversion stories. There are also the rise in kind of YouTubers and influencers who are speaking about their own kind of spirituality, their own Christianity. And I think while this generation doesn't remember a time without the internet, in this sense, in terms of the quiet revival, it has been very positive because I think a lot of how they're engaging with faith is through YouTube or is through the apps on their phones. But a lot of people talk about this as kind of people ticking the Christian box, which is a very different thing. This is particularly about church going. So these young people have gone into churches. They're not just staying behind their screens, but they are going someplace to engage in an embodied kind of church experience. There's so much to discuss in that space, but it's really exciting time to be working in this space. But it's also it throws up a whole load of questions about young men in particular, how they are getting to the church door, what happens after. From the pulpit when they're in the church, what are they hearing? What is driving them towards that place? So we are at Theos doing some research on that, some further research, exploring the reasons why young men in particular are being drawn to church communities. And yeah, what is driving that?
That's so cool. I when we send out the recording, I'd love to link to what Vyas is researching about that. It's very encouraging. I think for us in the US to kind of we can look at Great Britain and see some trends that are maybe just a step ahead of us or something interesting for us to observe. So thank you. This is a question about several questions have come in like this. So let's say you're part of a congregation. You want to be a help to young people, children up through teens and young adults, but maybe you're not in a leadership role. And so you're just like, what can I do to help? I'm retired. Or, one person actually said, how do we help people if like they're already so busy, they don't want another small group, like what can I do to engage? Do y'all have any practical tips for folks on what as a parent of young kids, how could that kind of person be a help to you?
I think obviously, to the extent that there are opportunities in the context of your local congregation or even the broader community to volunteer, to serve in children's ministry. I'd also say, and this isn't always the case, sometimes you sort of put yourself out there or you enter kind of situations with expectations and it doesn't work out. But I'll say, and I've seen this in my own life, but also in the context of the Center for Christianity and Public Life and the programs we run, young people are really desirous of intergenerational relationships and wisdom. And I think Miss Valerie is watching this call right now, and Miss Valerie is a wonderful prayer partner for us. And I remember she was gracious enough to attend a young professionals cookout that we had, and we just sort of had the idea of, what if we set out a chair next to Miss Valerie and just saw what happened? And over the course of 3 hours, it was like it brings tears to my eyes even now to think of sort of this stream of young professionals taking sort of their turn, sitting next to Miss Valerie and asking her about their life, hearing her talk about their own, and what a I think a mutual blessing it was. And so, I want to caution against sometimes that you can put out a chair next to you and it won't be filled. But I do think that there's a real hunger for relationship in a context of trust and openness, of true curiosity. So, Bonhoeffer has this idea, as Christians, we never meet one-on-one. Our meetings are always mediated. That's a very important thing to me, but one sort of necessity of that is that we don't think about enacting our agenda for the young people in our life. We really look to Jesus and seek to be the kind of people Jesus need us to be, and let Jesus mediate that relationship. And so so yeah, but I do think intergenerational churches, intergenerational context, creating the opportunity for young people at least to take up the offer. And sometimes it can be really transformative in their lives and in yours.
Yeah, great point. It's mutually beneficial there. Chinny, what would you add?
Just quickly, I think in the stage of life I'm at, babysitting,
Yes.
taking the kids out. We've got various friends who do that. My eldest son's godmother and her husband are often just taking him off places, or just coming to a museum with all of us and letting me and my husband sit and have a coffee while they kind of go around with them and explore. Just the practical help. I think at this stage it is just so physically all-consuming. So being around, I think, is helpful. I think in my church, one of the things I love is that the people who help out with the children's work are old white men and young people and black women. And I just love it when my kind of 3-year-old runs up to Paul in that church.
Yes.
He loves Paul. He loves Paul's camper van. They just having those different types of role models, and people in their life who they can go to, I think is really beautiful. And you just don't get that anywhere else. I don't
Yeah.
get that anywhere else in my life, in my community.
It's so good. Yeah, I'm thinking of two examples. One, a lady in my church who invited my daughter to come learn how to sew a pillow. I mean, like, bring your own fabric, come over, I have a sewing machine, I'll show you how. And just, it wasn't overtly spiritual, but as you said, Michael, like, Christ is present in that. And then kind of just restoring that chain of knowledge of passing down skills, passing down recipes, passing down these are treasures that are kind of like the building blocks of a relationship that establishes something to where now she knows that lady, and they can talk about other things too. So yeah, and just another example that comes to mind is somebody else at church cooking with the kids and making sure they're involved in church meals and stuff like that. So meals are a great place, guys. Meals, it's biblical. Get together and feast. It's a great way to get to know each other. As we're wrapping up, I wanted to give a lot of people asked for resources, and we could have turned this whole thing into just like a resource blitz where we're talking about like which books, which curricula, which events and podcasts and all of this. But as we've had the conversation, I wanted to give each of you a chance to kind of, if there are a few resources that really come to mind as like they'd be helpful for the folks that are here listening, let us know what those are. And Michael, please also, I'd love for you to give everybody a little overview of the summit coming up, because you guys are going to get into more of this there.
Yeah, sure. So a few resources. Andy Crouch wrote a book with with Amy Crouch, the TechWise family, and then Andy's book, The Life We're Looking For. Those are two, especially at the intersection of technology formation, young people. Those are really helpful. I really appreciate the work of Kara Powell at the Fuller Youth Institute. I think Kayla Craig does wonderful work, particularly providing sort of liturgies for families. My friend Tish Harrison Warren has done really valuable work here. And so I think there are a number of really wonderful resources, and could think of others. In Washington, D.C., October 20th through the 21st, we'll be gathering Christians, people who love their communities, for a 2-day summit. It's a summit that Chini's spoken at before. James Catford, who I know is well known in this community, has spoken at the summit before. A number of folks that believe that the knowledge and the Christian and the resources of the Christian faith are contributions to the public good, that they have public salience. And so we'll be talking about artificial intelligence, but also an array of other issues, including challenges facing men and boys, with Richard Rees. We'll be talking about Gen Z. We'll be talking about a whole range of issues. And we'd love for folks attending this webinar to be with us in DC in October. And again, the link And the code, I think, are in the chat. The code is Renovare. The link is ccpubliclife.org/summit. But we'd love to have folks come out and join us.
So great. What a good guys are convening. Great, great voices. And I know that'll be wonderful. Chinny, I definitely want people to listen to your podcast, the documentary series. And then is there another one you do? And tell us what other resources have been helpful to you as a mom, or that you would recommend to people based on your work?
Yeah, I know that one of the kind of books that helped kind of form this conversation was The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, which I would just recommend anyone who hasn't read it yet.
Yes.
I found it transformative, compelling, practical, and it kind of changed how I saw my role basically as a parent in this particular time. So would highly recommend that book. But also, this is obviously, lots of people have read this book, but I have only just read it this year, which is The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. And I was reading that through the lens of family practices and rituals and mm-hmm. Sabbath and slowing down in order to kind of form ourselves in terms of kind of shape our spiritual formation. So I'd highly recommend that. In terms of some of the technology things we were talking about, I would recommend a book called The New Age of Sexism by Laura Bates, which is pretty difficult to read, but it talks a lot about the dangers potentially of AI chatbots for younger people today. So I recommend that. And Theos, our website is theosthinktank.co.uk. We are currently doing a big project on motherhood called Motherhood Inside Out, and explores the kind of the a transformation that happens at the point of becoming a mother, both kind of socially, politically, and spiritually. We're kind of doing a global study as well as a kind of UK one. So that's the details of that are on our website.
That's exciting. Awesome. Thank you. A few Renovare resources came to mind that Monty might be able to link these. If not, we'll put them in the notes when we send this out. But for the questions around the formation of our image of God and these kind of worldview parts of us that do very much impact how we see ourselves and how we interact with the world, we have a course headed up by Carolyn Ahrens. It's a video course called From the Inside Out. And it's a just kind of like, what is spiritual formation? It's not for children, but I just really firmly believe all of these things are very much true for our kids. And actually that the early years are where a lot of this stuff gets in and takes shape. And kind of the older you are, the harder it is to shift and mold. So really helpful resource that we had a number of questions that we did not get into today, but just because it opens up another whole area for a conversation about trauma, about spiritual abuse, about things that happen in early years that warp the way young people feel towards the church and towards God. So, so important. And I just want to put on everybody's radar a workshop we have coming up, led by Caitlin Dixon, called Kintsugi Kingdom. Kintsugi is a Japanese art of mending pottery, and it's a metaphor. The whole workshop is about mending after there's been harm, especially church harm. So really recommend that, and it might, again, like not specifically geared towards children, but also very much relevant to how young people, what they're carrying and how that shapes their interest in church and all of that. So just wanted to share those two things. And I'm so thankful for you, Chinny, for you, Michael. Thank you to everybody who has been here today. I've asked Chinny if she would close us in a word of prayer. So that will be our closing for today. And we just can't wait to continue this conversation with y'all in the future. So thank you, Chinny.
God, who shepherds us and who forms us, we thank you that you are the same yesterday, today, and forever. The God of all generations, that there are now and that there have ever been. God, we pray for our young people in our various nations. God, would you reveal yourself to them in the ways in which they might receive? Would you form them? Would you draw them close? Would you also draw others alongside them to help them in this journey of becoming more like Jesus? God, I pray for parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts and friends who are long to be to come alongside this generation. Give us the opportunity to do so. Open doors to new relationships. Help us to form those bonds with these younger people, those who live in our homes, but also who are in our churches and our communities. God, would we be of use to them? People who they can trust, people in whom they can see Jesus. And God, I pray for the work of Renovare, that you would continue to help them to help form and shape others in this journey of discipleship. Thank you, God. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. So good to be with you. And stay tuned. We will send you the recording and these resources. And thank you again so much for sharing this time with us and your hearts with us. So great to be with y'all.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Goodbye.